You're listening to a social justice podcast hosted by Nicholas Sperling, brought to you by The Flag Shop, and inspired by a social justice coloring book.
Hello, this is a social justice podcast. I'm your host, Nicholas Sperling, and today I'm joined by Miel Bernstein from Project AIM. Miel, can you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, I'm Miel Bernstein. I live in Agassiz, BC, and I live on an organic farm and a horse farm. I'm a mom of two and also a co-founder of Project AIM, and Project AIM is now in its third year.
Wonderful. And can you explain to the audience what Project AIM is and how it became?
Totally. So AIM stands for Access to Incontinence and Menstrual Products. And we started, honestly, I was delivering through a food security program during COVID times called Extra Fair. And we decided to do a tampon drive, basically kind of a feel-good one-time collection around the holiday time. And we dispersed about $800 worth of products, thinking that was amazing and everyone was so generous. And what we realized very quickly, because the demands kept coming in, we got asked also if we could provide incontinence products at the same time. So we had a little bit of extra money and we did do that. But the demands kept coming in, word of mouth spread. And so very quickly we realized the massive need in our community and basically went to the people who we were helping and asked them to help us come up with a name and a concept, and Project AIM was born.
Wonderful. And why was the organization necessary? You talk about providing menstrual products and incontinence products to people. Why are they not able to access those themselves?
I think there's a variety of reasons, but the basic is because they're very expensive and it's an ongoing need, especially with incontinence products being a daily need, menstrual products being obviously a sort of typically monthly type of need. If people told me that I was going to be a menstrual educator, which is kind of what my title has become now, I would have laughed because I really didn't, other than my own experience, I didn't know that much about it. But what we quickly came to realize is that there are people in our local communities who are missing work, school, daily interactions because they do not have access either to the correct products or just the amount of money to purchase them. So if it's a choice between food or rent and menstrual incontinence products, it's obviously going to be the first two.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what services do you offer? Is it purely providing those to people? And if so, how do those get out? Or are there other services that you offer?
Those are super great questions because they've changed over the time. So when we started, it was basically people donated either money or products. So we had very typical products like the tampons and pads you would find in stores mostly. As we started getting donated money, we started reaching out to a bit more innovative, particularly menstrual companies and creating awesome partnerships to purchase other products. So the long and the short of it is we started by giving away products and people would just contact us. So they had my cell phone, we had our socials, and we would donate to individual households. And then we started getting, so like, for example, food banks or Indigenous outreach programs or low-income programs for women or shelters or outreach to unhoused people. It's just grown and grown and grown so we still do individual household outreach. People can contact us directly and pick up. We've reached out so that we have a pickup in Agassiz, Hope, Chilliwack, Abbotsford, and East Vancouver. So we pack weekly and then products get out to all of those locations and people can pick up at the locations closest to them. And in Chilliwack and Abbotsford and Agassiz, if they can't drive or they're homebound, we deliver if we can, if we have the volunteer power. Mm-hmm. So that was really the focus for the first couple of years, was just getting product out there. But we're a very small organization. So we're a board now of three. We're actually a registered nonprofit working towards charity status.
Okay.
Just because we leave a lot of grants on the table because we don't have charity status for now. And also people could get tax write-offs when
right.
we're a charity.
So that would encourage people to donate.
And businesses, mm-hmm. especially corporate donations. But we realized we could not touch the need with just being a small organization and trying to give out product. So we started working on the government, municipal government, provincial government level, trying to work with policy, trying to change policy. You know, we didn't talk a lot about menstrual equity when we started. We didn't really know a lot about those words and what they meant. But now really that's our big goal. And that means that everybody has access to the products they need, the education around them, and the healthcare that they need around menstruation and incontinence. We focus a little bit more on menstruation right now because there's a push through the government. So we have some momentum behind it, as well as doing advocacy with our government, trying to advocate that all public washrooms, all business washrooms have menstrual products in them. We realized that there was a massive need for education. So we have reached into the menstrual education world this year, and we've been offering menstrual education sessions to a whole bunch of different organizations.
Wow. And have you come in contact with, there's a teacher at Charles Best who worked with her students to provide menstrual products in Coquitlam's washrooms. So facilities in Coquitlam have now adopted this. Is that something that you've been working with them on, or is that something that happened independently?
So is that in schools?
That was in every governmental building in the city of Coquitlam, I believe.
I don't know the particular teacher-student combo that you're talking about, but there was a BC government mandate, I think it's 3 years ago now, that all public school washrooms were supposed to be provided with menstrual products. Okay. It just has been a super messy or not at all rollout. And just recently, the federal government said that all federal government washrooms need to be provided with menstrual products. So it's coming down the line. This is what I try to tell organizations or businesses that we approach. I believe in the next 5 years, a little bit depends on what governments come into power, et cetera. But I believe that what's coming is that there will be a mandate for all public washrooms, business washrooms, anywhere that is public facing, that they will have to have menstrual products in all the washrooms. So, you know, you can either follow and it's not such a big deal, or you can be a leader right now in the community and show the way. And that's kind of what our goal has been, is to work with leaders that want to show the way. So, for example, I live in Agassiz. Our district is District of Kent. So we went and met with city councillors.
Yeah.
And we asked them to work with us and be one of the first districts in BC to provide menstrual products in public washrooms. And they voted yes. So we're starting to see that in our little tiny district of Kent, being one of the second districts in all of BC. There was one on the island, was first before us, but we've been second to say yes and to start putting menstrual products. So like in their municipal library, sports facilities, public washrooms, etc.
Right. And when you say that there's a government mandate for all washrooms, are you talking about both men and women's washrooms as well as the sort of universal washrooms?
The language is a little bit fuzzy. So it says washrooms.
Okay.
We also have close contact with the Chilliwack School District because Agassiz and Chilliwack, so part of our team, other than me, live in Chilliwack, and we have kids in the Chilliwack School District. So we've been working closely with the Chilliwack School District. To me, it clearly says all washrooms, but it says washrooms.
Right.
So it kind of leaves this ambiguity of whether it means only girls, only students. Does that include staff? Does that include boys' washrooms? We interpreted it as all washrooms because the language is barrier-free, nobody is left behind, all genders are included, etc. So the language is clear other than the specific language around which bathrooms.
Right.
Amazingly, our Chilliwack School District, we have a very progressive board generally. 5 of 7 are very progressive. So they took it at its word and they mandated all washrooms. So over the holidays, all Chilliwack schools have menstrual products in them, boys and girls.
Just this past holiday, so that's very recent.
Yeah. The rollout has been rough, though, to be totally honest. But they did it. They just did it. We actually had a meeting. We went to the school board with the delegation and said, part of what comes with these rollouts is actually education for the public, because there's a lot of shame and stigma around menstruation and menstrual products anyways. Gender issues aside, and we can talk about that, I hope.
Yeah.
We felt that we could help them with some education and discussions with staff, with administrators, with students, and with parents so that the rollout would be smooth, they went ahead and did it, just did it. And so it hasn't been very smooth so far.
Right. So there could have been a little bit more planning that went into that, perhaps.
Or just, I think what happened is there's been some pressure because it was actually a mandate from the government a number of years ago. And it just, there's been like, why hasn't this happened? Because we are specifically a menstrual equity organization in our community, and we've been growing and gaining a lot of momentum and press. People tell us, I'm a teacher in this school and there's no menstrual products. And, you know, they've been asking us to provide them when it's actually supposed to be provided through the government, through the school system. Mm. So I think because there's been this kind of pressure and pushback, they just did it.
Right.
Which I understand the intention was wonderful. Just the reaction from the public has been some positive and some not so positive.
Right. And because that's no longer your responsibility or your organization's responsibility, does that free up your resources to be able to put them towards other things?
It never really was our responsibility, other than we try to provide support for organizations that want to be leaders in menstrual equity. And we really hoped, because we particularly are in these districts, that they could do it. Our organization was never meant to be literally, we tried to do a one-time feel-good campaign. So all of what we are is beyond what we ever imagined, and it just has a life of its own. We're trying to keep up really all the time. We did get a grant this year through Food Banks and Wage Canada for menstrual education, for furthering menstrual education. So that has meant 20 menstrual education days that are funded, which is amazing. Because what we do at our education days is we provide a basic understanding of menstruation. Then we do a whole demo and feel and touch and talk about all the products that are available now, from disposables to reusables to cups and discs and underwear and all the things. Mm-hmm. And then the really fun part is we have products to give away to everybody, because what we believe is if we just educate people on all of the products available, there's going to be some people in the room that can go and purchase a cup or a disc or underwear because they can afford it. And there's going to be people in the room that cannot. Mm-hmm. So if we can provide those products for free at every education day, that's an equalizer and that's equity.
Right.
But that's expensive. Mm-hmm. So to have these 20 funded has been amazing. And I knew it would be exciting to be able to give products away. Had curiosity around how cups and discs worked and the different kinds of underwear and do they, you know, all those kind of questions I knew would be popular and interesting. I think what we've all been most surprised by is the amount of shame and stigma and difficult menstrual stories that people have to share, and the weight that we can lift just by having conversations. So it's really important.
Right. And speaking of those conversations, it sounds like you're taking feedback from the community and using that to determine sort of the direction that the organization moves in. You've talked about taking on new initiatives. So what does that process of consulting with your community look like?
Well, we are readily available to the community. So what's attached to the text or phone call to Phone Project AIM is me. You just get my personal phone. So, for example, I have people that will literally call me up and say, are you the period lady? I used to be like, I didn't know how to answer it. And now I'm like, I am the period lady. Mm-hmm. And people will literally say, you know what? I'm in my XYZ years and I've been always afraid to use the tampon. Can you tell me how? And I will actually walk people through the process of like how to safely use a tampon, whatever it might be. So I am actually available by text or phone call. We're available on all the socials. People can anonymously give feedback to us. And then our drop-off locations. So, for example, the Bookman in Chilliwack downtown is a drop-off location, but also a place where people will leave us notes, donations, sometimes product, etc., or they can do pickups. So there's a number of ways that people can reach out to us and tell us their needs, their questions, or their negative comments. That's rolling, you know, now with this rollout. I personally get a lot more negative attacks now, but I guess that comes with working in the equity space.
Right. And I guess as you grow, you get on more people's radar. I find it really curious, though, that you're still sort of having these conversations that you would think people should be able to access information about more readily, or that there shouldn't be quite as much stigma around. I watched the show Julia recently, and I don't know if you've seen it. It's about Julia Child. And I mean, this is set, I believe it's in the 60s. And they're having conversations around how women don't know enough about things like menstruation. But it feels like we're still having those conversations now. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, I don't know how many decades later, right? Mm-hmm. Why is there so much stigma around this, do you think?
I saw this question coming up I don't totally know how to answer it. It's such a big question. When we look back through cultures, there's been a common thread of women who menstruate being considered dirty, dangerous, untouchable, etc. So this is not a new issue coming up. On the other hand, when we look back to more matriarchal type societies, women menstruating were considered having the most power, being the most close to spirit. So those are very differing ideas and thoughts around the same issue, right? I think there's a lot of fear around women's power. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding around menstruation itself. So because actually through this grant, we are going to be providing 3 menstrual education videos that are going to go out in a variety of language and stuff. So I feel like I've had to really learn more in depth about menstruation. Mm-hmm. And I've been shocked to find out that even in the scientific field and world, there is a massive taboo around studying menstruation, which is crazy because they study everything about the human body, right? But that, it's like if you go and you say, I want this to be like my main focus, the professors generally are like, why would you want to do that? Or like, ooh, like they still have this stigma around menstrual blood being something different or dirty than like every other bodily function.
Right.
So that's a thing. So even as far as our scientific world, there's a stigma there to this day. In terms of menstrual education, there is not a level playing field in public schools, even in British Columbia. And so my example is we've done some menstrual education in schools in Vancouver. The youth have been very well educated and there's a lot of equity and an understanding and empathy and acceptance there versus, you know, further out in smaller communities where sex education is not welcomed by the parents. And so menstrual education goes side by side with that. So there really hasn't been any. And so the feelings of shame for girls and of like shaming from boys and stuff like that is much, much stronger. So from community to community, from town to town, from school to school, it is totally different what education kids have had, how they feel about it. And so, of course, that goes into their whole life.
Right. And are there certain demographics of the population that are most in need of menstrual products that are you seeing? It's a lot of people who are dealing with financial issues or you know, people of a certain age or something along those lines.
It has shocked me how many people are in need in our community across every demographic. Mm-hmm. So yes, definitely lower income demographics, folks with disabilities, BIPOC, LGBTQ people may struggle more, maybe even to find the products that are right for them. So maybe they have access, maybe even some of our religious families access their kids only to say pads, typical pads, let's call it. But maybe their kids do super intense sports and that might not work for them. And the kids really want to access like tampons, say. So we get lots of calls from youth who need something that they don't have access to in their home. It really is across the board. And right. I had no idea.
And can you explain, I saw on your website the term period poverty, and I've seen that before, but can you explain what that is?
So to the best of my understanding, it just means people who bleed cannot afford the products that they need and it affects their daily life. So they miss, we definitely have youth in all of our communities who do not go to school a number of days every cycle because they don't have access to products. They stay home or they're using products that are unsafe. So for example, using toilet paper, both as maybe a liner for underwear, which does not work very well. Mm-hmm. But also I've heard of folks using toilet paper to roll up and use as tampons. This is not safe, right? It for a lot of reasons. Or they're using products much longer than is safe too. And then you have bacterial risk, toxic shock risk, etc. So Yeah, not access to the products they need due to finances.
Right, mm-hmm. Which is a horrible position to be in when you can't take care of your basic necessities.
Totally. It should not be, right? We live in what is supposed to be one of the wealthiest countries in the world, mm-hmm. and we have over 50% of people who have at least one time missed something in their life because they couldn't afford their products.
Right.
Very high.
That's extremely high.
Yeah.
And I noticed that you use the term people who bleed when you're talking about menstruation. Can you explain why your organization makes a concerted effort to use language like that as opposed to saying that your products or your services are for women?
Yeah, so that term brings about some attacks to our organization, but we are committed to being an organization who believes in equity for all, and there are more people who bleed than just cis women. So there are trans, non-binary, and intersex people who bleed and need access to menstrual products, and we are a no-questions-asked, barrier-free organization. The language, I think, really matters, that people feel included and know that we support them.
Right. And when it comes to bleeding in contrast to incontinence, you've talked about some of the stigma involved in or associated with menstruation, but there's also stigma associated with incontinence. And I'm curious to know what you notice about the differences between the stigma associated with one or the other.
So I feel like we focus a little bit on menstruation right now because it's to do both. We still provide lots of incontinence products, but we haven't dived into the equity of it as much, just because really of capacity.
Mm-hmm.
I thought there would probably be more stigma around incontinence, and I'm actually surprised to find that the stigma around menstruation and menstrual products seems in some ways higher.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's because incontinence often comes with aging and is maybe a little bit accepted because it's sort of a natural process, although of course menstruation is a totally natural process too. Mm-hmm. Incontinence is less gendered. The people who have incontinence obviously feel some shame and stigma around it sometimes. Folks who might have reluctance around supporting us in our menstruation are fairly happy to help support people with incontinence.
Oh, weird.
It's weird. And I think it's because they feel like they're helping older people.
So if someone has a disability, perhaps they're okay with helping them. But if they're just experiencing a natural aspect of life, like, I mean, I equate menstrual products a lot of times to just general toiletries, right?
Absolutely.
Like
100%.
Toilet papers, some
right?
Things
it
that people need regularly.
It should be equal to toilet paper.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But that's not how everyone seems to view it. And
is it
mostly men that have that view because they don't have to use those products? Or are you seeing this from everyone?
So a lot of men, and kind of particular demographics of men for sure. In certain cultures, menstruation is stigmatized more.
Mm.
And also there seems to be this feeling of like, you should be able to just take care of that yourself, or like you should know so we shouldn't have to see it. So there is that.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of internalized misogyny amongst women. And so unfortunately, women can be really weaponize these things as well. We do see it more from men, but also from women, especially if it affects, say, their children in the boys' washrooms, not understanding how to address that with their boys,
mm-hmm.
And feeling that their boy was made to feel discomfort or uncomfortable around seeing menstruation products in the bathrooms, and that they feel that they need to stand up for their boy's discomfort versus teaching them about equity and teaching them that if something doesn't affect you, you can just pass it right by.
Right.
Or you can understand that maybe. So part of why we think that menstrual products should be in all washrooms, particularly in schools, that's one of the things we're talking about right now, is because we have boys that come from impoverished homes equally to girls. And we would like if their aunties, moms, sisters, friends, etc. at home need products, that those boys would have access to be able to help the family by taking them home.
Right.
So that's one reason. Another reason is, I don't know how much everyone knows this, but like menstrual pads particularly are really good for injury, bleeding. there are youth. So when we talk about incontinence, people think about older people, but actually there is like a lot of people that have small bladder incontinences. So it could be just like when you're growing, it can happen. So there's youth that have incontinence. They might have some sort of like illness or disability. You might have had like a set of big cut or injury and you can use. So there's a reason to have them just for first aid.
Mm-hmm. There's also other uses, like you can use a tampon to clean that area between your oven and your your counter or your fording water in your vehicle, and you can put it in your gas tank to make sure you don't get water in there.
So right?
All sorts of reasons why people would need them.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Right. And I just think sometimes exposure mm-hmm. can reduce people's anxieties around things too. So boys and such, seeing menstrual products on the regular just normalizes it, so that hopefully then if they do have a partner or someone who needs them to go to the store and buy it, they can just happily go to the counter and it's not a big deal like it has been in the past.
Right. Well, and speaking of normalizing it, one of the trends I've come across, and maybe this is just in my circles, I don't know if you've come across it, is a crustacean menstruation station.
I've heard of that. Can you explain that to me?
So it's part of a Facebook group that I'm okay. in, where these people were suggesting that you should have a station in your home full of menstrual products, whether you menstruate or not, mm-hmm. so that anyone who's coming over, who's using your facilities, has access to those products. So maybe you have a few different types of tampons in there, some different pads in there. Mm-hmm. And just because this group is focused on crustaceans in particular, so their funny. Idea was to have like a crab-themed bowl or something along those lines.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we believe, when I say we, I'm talking for our organization Project AIM, and it's also my personal belief, is that every bathroom should have menstrual products available. So mm-hmm. your home bathroom, like this work bathroom, public bathroom, school bathrooms, every bathroom should just have it, because it's like toilet paper. Right. So I love that idea. And we can help organizations that are like, how do I even start? So we can, you know, come to us if you want and we can help you.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, same That's with home ones. We can help home people if they're like, I don't know what to have. We can totally consult on that kind of stuff too.
Right.
Yeah.
And coming back to one of the things you were talking about earlier, which was these mandates coming down from the government. Mm-hmm. We have an NDP government right now. You have an NDP MLA in your region. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you've had some partnerships with her. So can you explain what your relationship with Kelly Padden looks like, why that's important to your organization?
So when we first became a community organization, after we did our first tampon drive and started running Project AIM, Kelly actually contacted us and said, you know, what you're doing is amazing, important work. Kelly is also the Minister of Gender Equity mm-hmm. in our province. So she's an amazing ally. And she said, can I speak about what you're doing at the legislature in Victoria? So she really was the first person to publicize a little bit about the work we did. And that was way back when honestly, I didn't even know what I was doing, or that we weren't much of anything. And since then, we've partnered with her a number of times. So last summer, we did a 4-part series with the United Way and Kelly Padden Project AIM. And we did community free menstrual discussions, info sessions. We did them at her office and she came and introduced them and sat in and helped lead. And then she also, this summer, myself and Tiffany from our organization actually went to Victoria as her guest, and she spoke about us again in the legislature and about what we're doing. And she's been very strongly helping the mandate for menstrual products to be normalized in bathrooms and helping us move forward. She is amazing for us.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. I've fortunately been able to work with Kelly Padden a few times. Because like you mentioned, she's focused on gender equity. That's sort of the mandate of her position. And mm-hmm. We do Trans Day of Visibility, Trans Day of Remembrance. It all sort of comes together there. And I've helped hang artwork in her office. And she's just an all around amazing person. So
totally.
I'm glad you have that connection and that she's helping your organization out. When it comes to the services that you're providing, the products that you're providing, are there any moments where you would not provide products to someone? Like, for instance, if a millionaire was to come in and say, I want some free products, would you say, sorry, you have too much money, we're not going to do that for you?
So we don't have any prerequisites for the people we help other than the products are going to stay local. So we mm-hmm. have been approached a few times by groups that want to ship products to, say, Africa or overseas.
Okay.
And generally, that's not what we do. So if they tell us they want to serve 500 people in Africa. We really want to stay local and helping our local community because there's such a big need. So in terms of someone who has a lot of money or doesn't have a lot of money, we actually don't know that because we don't ask.
Right.
And so even if I knew you, Nicola, were a millionaire and you came to me and said, I need XYZ, then you would get it. Because we are barrier free.
Right. So that's the priority, is making sure everything's barrier free. It's as accessible as possible. And I would imagine there's not very many people that can afford to buy these products that would come and ask for them. But it's one of those things where I think we deal with this with a lot of organizations. It doesn't make sense to put that barrier in place for the amount of times it might get abused.
And we feel the same way about washrooms, because that's a question that comes up all the time. Well, what if people steal it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? What if you put free menstrual products in the washrooms and people steal them? So our answer to that is, if they're free, they're not stealing them.
Right.
And if they're taking them, it's because they need them. And if they're over taking them, it's because they don't necessarily know that they're going to be provided ongoingly, so they may take extra.
Mm-hmm.
So what we say when we're putting them in a new organization and everything disappears really quickly, is the research shows that it's about 3 to 6 months of 30% more in the first number of months that reduces to normalizing over 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And you just keep putting it out there.
Right.
So I think those are two different reasons. People might take them because they need them, and people might take extra because they don't think it's going to be there next time. And once you fix both of those problems, it's not a problem anymore.
Right. And I would imagine that you could equate that to toilet paper. Sometimes people will come in and steal a bit of toilet paper, but you know, who's stealing it to resell it or something like that? They're taking it because they need that.
Exactly. And we feel if menstrual products are available everywhere, then the need is going to be filled.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is the way, you know, a small organization like us, we can't fill the whole need. So if we know that our public washrooms, they may not have the variety that we have, but they're going to have something for people so that they're not missing out on their life, or they're healthier, they're not getting infections or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
And do you believe that these products are or should be a human right?
I do believe they're a human right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And so when you say that something's a human right, I mean, we have this conversation when it comes to housing a lot, right? Housing is a human right. The Canadian government has said housing is a human right. There's still people without houses or without homes. So what does it mean for something to be a human right, in your opinion?
I mean, I don't know how to fix housing, but I believe everybody should be housed.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I just listened to a discussion on how they basically removed homelessness in Finland. And so it was, instead of through what we have, which is this staircase model, so you need to do a number of things before you get the sort of golden goose of a house. If, say, you've been unsheltered, or you've had addiction issues or mental health issues or whatever, you have to fix all these things and then maybe you're provided with some sort of shelter. They decided that doesn't work at all. They scrapped it entirely and they tried housing first. Mm. And everybody who wanted to participate was given a clean, safe shelter of a home and 24/7 support. So mental health support, addiction support, whatever it is they were needed. And 90% stayed sheltered, and a lot of the issues that were really troublesome to them started fixing themselves when they had shelter and dignity first.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't exactly know, like, housing is beyond me, although I believe everyone should do it. So this is something we can tackle. So we believe everybody who bleeds should have menstrual products. Anyone who needs incontinence products should have them. And how we're trying to tackle that is through giving them away as we can. We're all run by donation, and we do everything. So through grants, through personal or public donations, through volunteer work, but also through this advocacy of trying to say to the government, hey, like, these products are needed and they should be free, and they're causing people to miss out on society interaction. So let's provide them in every way we can. And then the next will be incontinence and stuff like that. I'm pretty social leaning, though, and I really believe that we have a responsibility to our whole community, because we can only be as good as we're all, you know, we're as good as each other is doing.
Right. I mean, I think a lot of times these issues boil down to cost, right? The government's not doing something because it's going to costs money. Taxpayers aren't going to support spending their money on X, Y, and Z. And when you look at housing, I know that there's been some pilot projects around this. It costs less to house people than it does to leave people homeless, because there's all these other effects of people living on the streets. They're getting sick. They're going to the hospital. They're using resources that way. And I imagine the same is probably true of menstruation. I don't have any numbers to back that up. But when you think about the fact that if someone doesn't have access to menstruation products, maybe they're getting toxic shock. They're going to the hospital. Mm-hmm. They're using up those services. We already have huge wait lines in the hospitals. So it seems like it, and maybe there needs to be studies into this, but it seems to me like there's probably a financial benefit to providing that, even if there's an upfront cost to doing so first.
I think so. And people, again, if they're missing work, there's a financial cost to that. If they're missing school, there's definitely a financial cost to that, to them in their future, but to us as a society as well. And I just think if we all add just a little bit to our regular bathroom budgets, I don't think it has to be that much. We already do toilet paper and paper towel and whatever. If everybody does that and just provides them everywhere, it I don't think it has to be a very big cost, to be honest.
Absolutely. And I mean, also, when you talk about human rights, if you're a country that can't take care of people's basic necessities, what are you doing? I mean, in my opinion, everything else comes secondary to that, right?
Totally. As again, we are one in a lot of ways, right? And we are only as strong as the person who is doing the least good, whatever that might mean.
Right.
So we have to, like, as we rise up, it is our responsibility to lift everyone around us.
Yeah. And I mean, the counter to that I've heard a few times is that that's not possible in a capitalist society. In a capitalist society, there always has to be people at the bottom. There has to be people at the top. Otherwise, it doesn't function. Do you have that belief?
I believe late stage capitalism is failing us. So I don't believe in this system exactly as it's operating right now anyways.
Right.
So I see that that could be true. I just don't think it's the best way forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's I ask that question a little bit more now because it seems to be a common theme on this podcast. A lot of issues that we're seeing come back to capitalism.
100%.
For our audience, we're posting short form content now on our social media. And the one that we're working on at the moment is ageism. And the person who is speaking about ageism, Barbara Finley, was saying a lot of the issues with ageism come back to capitalism. Mm-hmm. And that's something that until she started speaking about that, I never would have thought of. And so that's where my mind goes now is, is the system failing us?
Yes. Mm-hmm. In so many ways.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if we have our elders who we should be gaining knowledge from and revering in a lot of ways, sitting at home in shame because they have incontinence and they can't, that is a failing system. 100%. And if we want to get into a little bit, it's interesting in the menstrual world, there's a lot of innovation happening and there's a lot of equitable producers that do a lot of work to try to reduce or erase menstrual poverty and create menstrual equity. And that is not the case with incontinence. Incontinence products are made by the big companies like P&G, for example. And even for us to try to get a wholesale account with them, they don't care.
Right.
Whereas in the menstrual world, we have amazing partnerships with organizations who not only give us like NGO pricing so that our dollars go so much further, but also we get boxes of donations from them because their whole mandate with these companies is to work with organizations like ours so that everybody is provided for, which is so cool.
Well, when it comes to buying anything, the more you buy, the better purchasing power you have, the lower price you can get. So I imagine if we get into the habit of providing these products across the entire country, then we're going to have the ability to reduce the costs, provide more, create better relationships with the people that are creating these products.
Definitely. And we will, as menstrual equity becomes stronger and we still have any capacity in terms of volunteer power, we will turn our sights to incontinence and work on that too, for sure.
And well, with that in mind, what is your hope for the future of Project AIM?
So I used to say I wish we didn't have to exist at all, but that was mostly when we were just giving out products and it was just, I felt like they should just be available and then that would be that.
Right.
So I'm really excited about the work of the education.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, being able to have a 1 or 2 hour session with a group of people and have them having carried shame stories for their entire life that they can discuss and people can empathize with them, and we can maybe talk about it in a way that reduces it or just allows it to go entirely or at least not pass it on to next generation. So, for example, I've had moms of daughters who have said, I felt so much shame around menstruating that I have not wanted to talk to my daughter about it. I have not known how to do it without passing on shame. And so when we can either provide that education for both of them together or help her understand how to talk about it or reduce her own shame, and you can see like breaking these patterns just within one education session, I think the future for AIM in menstruation as equity comes for product availability is going to be through education. So hopefully through like school systems or through videos that can go out to remote locations or whatever. The more people understand, the more visibility there is, the more we reduce the thing, you know, the things that we can shine a light on are no longer in the dark.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And with that in mind, one of the questions that I ask in every episode is what our audience can do to help. So I guess in this case, what can our audience do to help Project AIM, or what can our audience do to help reduce the stigma around menstrual products and or incontinence products?
So I think there's a lot. I mean, first of all, we are strictly run by donations, so people can donate to us a lot of different ways, either through product drives, if they might want to take something like that on. You can donate to us through e-transfer, through drop-offs to any one of our drop-off locations, either product or cash, whatever. Cash goes far for us because we have these amazing partnerships, but everything helps. So, of course, that's one way. Volunteering, if you want to volunteer with us, we have lots of opportunity for volunteering, everything from social media to driving and delivering to packing to... there's endless opportunities. So we do one big event a year that's been our major fundraiser, all sorts of stuff like that. Put menstrual products in your bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Ask. So if you have youth in school, ask what kind of menstrual education is in school. We do menstrual education days for organizations. So if that sounds interesting, talk to us about that. For incontinence, you know, that's a big one because we have to start talking to our government about who they... there is some people who get free incontinence products, but the hoops you have to go through and the clarity of who gets them and who doesn't needs to be addressed. So that's a whole thing.
Right.
And, you know, really just take a deep breath. If something feels... if you're going to be like, ew, about menstruation... take a deep breath. There's so much good education out there just on YouTube or whatever, and realize that it's like the basic human function that has us all here. And
right.
It's kind of amazing and cool. And just do yourself a favor and learn a little bit about it. Have some empathy for people who are menstruating because it's not the easiest, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of symptoms that can go along with it. And generally, if there's people in the room, probably somebody is menstruating at that time and maybe not feeling their 100% best, either mood-wise or physically, and just have some empathy.
Right. Well, that's such a good point that none of us would be here if it wasn't for menstruation.
Right? Totally.
I mean, we're getting close to the end of the podcast now. So is there anything that we haven't talked about that you really want to discuss before we wrap things up?
I don't think so. I just think I feel really lucky to have fallen into this and... to hopefully to be able to be making a difference for people and also just changing some minds slowly around menstrual equity is kind of a big honor for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been an honor for me to have you as a guest, and
thank you.
Learned a lot. I hope our audience has as well. This has been a Social Justice Podcast. I'm your host, Nicholas Berling. I've been joined today by Miel Bernstein from Project AIM.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Social Justice Podcast, hosted by Nicholas Berling, brought to you by The Flag Shop, and inspired by A Social Justice Coloring Book.